Welcome, welcome everyone back to Society Says. I'm your host, Sydney, and I'm actually your co-host, Sydney, because we have somebody else that will be hosting the podcast now. Okay, it's my boyfriend. Say hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Allora.
Allora.
Allora. Guys, do you know that in Italian, allora just means well?
So it's like imagine, like, I can't remember what show it was that you were watching.
Master of None.
Master of None. Yeah. And I don't know if he says this or not, but he's like, imagine being a supervillain in Italy, and instead of going, well, 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 you're going, allora, allora, allora. I don't know, but a lot of the time I'm like, hum, hum, hum.
Well, wait, you said hey, but you didn't say your name.
Oh, hello, everybody. My name is Lalo. I'm Sydney's boyfriend. This is my second or third podcast that I've been on.
Okay, professional.
That's not my own, I should say.
It is yours now.
Yeah, yeah. I've never really published like any podcast episodes, or I have a couple of times. But yeah, I'm just excited. This is a new venture, a new journey that we're going into together, and I know this is something that you already had set up and you wanted to bring me along, and I'm grateful and I'm really appreciative of the opportunity. I'm just excited. I'm excited to see how it goes from here and what we get into, what discussions we get into and stuff like that. So I'm just excited. I really am. Even though it sounds like I'm tired.
It is. I will say it is 1:30 a.m. on a Saturday. So, you know, there's that. But other than that, yeah, we're gonna be talking today about culture. He's Mexican, I'm Black, so, you know, already right there, that's Miguel right there, you know what I'm saying? If you really want to know, that's, you know, that's already blending. But we're just gonna be kind of talking about it because it's never really like affected our relationship or anything like too directly, but, you know, it's interesting though because we've both definitely seen like different things in different cultures. He's watched shows, I've listened to music, we've both eaten food, so we're just gonna kind of be talking about it all. And, you know, as always, stay tuned.
Let's get it.
So I know I said we're gonna be talking about culture. I think the funny thing is, like, I know I'm Black, and so like it's pretty apparent. Do you know I'm Black?
You know what? I haven't noticed.
Wow.
We've been dating for
a whole year.
Well, a year on the 17th.
Yeah.
And you're Black.
Yeah.
You know, why didn't you tell me this sooner?
My bad.
This is something. This is like first date. Things that you need to tell me, like,
right.
Like your name, your number, social security number.
Am I a killer?
Yeah.
And then I'm Black.
Yeah. See,
gotcha.
It's like a checklist.
Okay.
Of things that you need to go over. Like, I don't know if you noticed.
That I use Apple Music too instead of Spotify. Don't throw up. Y'all get on my nerves. Anyways, but you know, I think like being Black and in some ways, not in some ways, it's just normal to me. Like, I wake up, I'm Black, go to sleep, I'm Black, like, it's whatever. Some days, it's really pivotal, you know, like, when there is, you know, a shooting of a Black person, when there is, like, police violence, when it's, like, very serious. You know, other days, it's pivotal in other ways, like Will Smith slapping Chris Rock.
Chris Rock slapping Will Smith. The other way around. Chris Rock slapped. Yeah. Oh, no, Will Smith.
Will Smith. Yeah, what?
I have one
pimp anyway.
I have 2 a.m. brain.
Got you. You know, like, so that, or like, you know, Zendaya winning the Emmy. Like, there's, you know, there's different reasons or ways and like awesome things that happen when you're Black, but there's also like terrible things that happen when you're Black. And I think it's the same thing. I mean, you know, don't want to assume nothing, but I feel like it's the same way with other cultures as well. So we just kind of wanted to get into it. My question for you, sir, is what's something interesting that you like learned about my culture, like either through dating me or just like in general, like you were like, oh, you know, like Black culture is like,
well, I will tell you this, the way I grew up and I was raised, I grew up in predominantly Black neighborhoods my entire life. Like, you see where my parents' house is, like majority, I think all of my closest neighbors, like the two people that live in front of them and two people next to them, are all Black. And as a kid, I mostly hung out with either other Black kids or other Hispanic kids. And I did have, you know, a good little sprinkling of a white folk, a little flurry, but I grew up around Black people my entire life. I think my biggest, I guess, cultural shock, you would say, was the fact of, like, so for me, it's like hair and how long it takes you to do hair. And it's not just you. I mean, obviously it's other Black women. It's like, so when I was living with my old roommates, who three of them were Black and one of them was Costa Rican, like, it shocked me.
Shout out to the twins, Devin and Kevin. I mean,
Destiny and Desiree. Because, like, living with them, I remember one time Destiny got out of the shower and I was like, oh, did you cut your hair? She's like, no, it shrinks. I was like, it shrinks like that. Like, yeah. I don't know why, but my mind couldn't wrap around the fact that, like, the hair shrunk that much. And then, like, with you, it's like, okay, there's shrinkage, but there's also, like, you have to really take care of your hair. You got to really maintain it. You got to make sure it's properly clean. And, like, especially with, like, you putting in braids, it's a lengthy process because, like, you got to take out the old ones. You got to make sure your hair is washed, fully dried before you can put anything
in. Shout out to Black women. Also, shout out to me because I did my own braids for the first time in, like, 3 years. But shout out to Black women. I just wanted to put that in there.
and for me, like, my entire life, it's like people would always come up to me like, oh, my God, you have such good hair. Like, I love how curly your hair is.
That's, like, statement, good hair, is so, like, it's like weaponized almost. Like, have you ever, like, so with, like, good hair, like, air quotes around good hair, people say that, like, people would say that about people who have, like, who are, like, half Black, half white, who had, like, they had curls, but they had, like, the more ringlet curls, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, because I have 4C hair, so it's, like, people would never tell me I had good hair. They just was like, oh, okay, like, you know, but my cousins or somebody, like, they would say they had good hair, and I'm like, what, you know, what's the difference? And that would be what it was, like, mm-hmm. because it was, like, more flowy or, like, easier to, like, maintain, mm-hmm. and I'm like, dang, good hair, what you talking about? And, like, so, yeah, the fact that people are using your hair, because your hair is kind of similar to that, like, texture, mm-hmm. I'm like, dang, people are still saying good hair, like, all hair is good hair, like, you know, I don't know, because it made me feel some type of way as, like, a kid, so it's, like, you know, growing up trying to, like, really love my hair, mm-hmm. that's been a big journey, too, mm-hmm. for me personally, but, you know, but I feel you on that one.
No, yeah.
People do be saying that a lot.
I guess, and like I said, like, I grew up around this basically all my life, so, like, I've seen the ins and outs, like, nothing really surprises me. At the end of the day, we're both minority groups and we share a lot of the same struggles just from different points of view. So another thing is, like, I want to say we haven't necessarily encountered more racism, mm-hmm. since we started dating, but it's more of, like, I can see the opposite side of the coin, you know, because, like, for me growing up Hispanic, like, I didn't know I was fucking Mexican until I was, like, in elementary school, until I was, like, in third or fourth grade when we were doing all these different, like, cultural studies or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, like, I didn't know. I mean, obviously, I knew that I was brown. I wasn't white. I wasn't Black. I wasn't, you know, any other color. I was brown for sure. Mm-hmm. I was an ESOL in elementary school, even though I don't have an accent, but it was just the fact that, like, growing up, we only spoke Spanish in our household.
Your English is really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I'm just fucking kidding.
So growing up, like, we only spoke Spanish in our household. And so I had ESOL for, like, the first couple of years of elementary school. And then I got out of that. But there wasn't too much of a difference, I would say, as far as, like, dating goes. I mean, obviously, hair is the biggest one because, like, I didn't fully know the full extent of, like, what all it takes to get your hair done how you want it done. Mm-hmm. We've seen the good and we've seen the bad of getting your hair styled. And yeah, I mean, Other than that, really, there wasn't too much of a difference. Like I said, like I've been around Black people my entire life, and honestly, and I don't know if it's like a, I don't know if it's a minority thing, or a me thing, or whatever it is. But it's like when I'm around other minority groups, like Black people, Asians, other Hispanics, Filipinos, like people from Africa, people from Haiti.
Asian.
Filipino people are considered Asian?
Yeah.
They are? I thought they were their own race.
No, Philippines is an Asian country.
Oh, okay.
Like cool. Taiwan and, yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
The more you know.
The more you know. And so it's like, I feel more comfortable being around other minority groups. And don't get me wrong, I don't feel necessarily uncomfortable when I'm around white people, but it's more of like a code switching scenario to where it's like, I know that there's certain things that I can and should say.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm around other minority groups, and especially my friends, because mm-hmm. we're all minorities, it's just comfortable. For me, it's just a comforting feeling.
I feel you. I think the only thing, like, I noticed or, like, big culture change... Actually, there's two. Well, obviously a bit of a language barrier, you mm-hmm. know, some of the family members. To let you guys know, most of his family does, like, pretty much exclusively speak Spanish. So that's that on that, but that's because you guys, like, everybody grew up in a Spanish-speaking household. I mean, you know, and I'm also pretty sure for the most part everybody knows and understands English. I mean, but yeah, like, you know, obviously there's a comfort in speaking Spanish, and there's like a, like, the cultural, you know, like passing down, you know, like people want to make sure that their kids speak Spanish too, because there's like little kids. And it's cool because there's like little kids who, like, once I started coming around, they know, like Mia. What's Mia to you?
I would consider her my cousin.
Cousin, yeah. So, like, he has his little cousin, Mia. Shout out to Mia.
And shout out to Mia.
Shout out to Anai. Shout out to everybody. But, yeah, shout out to Juan. Like, we shout the whole family out. Shout out to... Okay. Shout out to my brother and them.
Shout out half of Mexico.
No, shout out to Juarez. No, I'm just kidding. You're not even from Juarez.
No.
Guys, I'm racist. I just want to let you guys know before we get too deep into podcast.
It's been established.
Facts. But yeah, so shout out to Mia for real though. But like once I started coming around, like it's cute because these kids, they're being taught to speak Spanish in their households, obviously, because, you know, their parents mostly speak Spanish, but they also want to like pass down that culture history. Like they want Spanish to be the first language, and then they get into school and they learn more English or whatever, or they get around other people. But it's cool because Mia will like speak Spanish to her mom, her brother, her dad, like everybody else in the family. And then when she gets around me, she's like, hi, Sydney. And like, she'll speak, you know, English, and just like, she just code switches. And I think it's so cute. And like, it's also like a nod to how smart she is, because I know as a kid, I would just keep speaking whatever language, you know, I want. So it's just like, I think that's really cool. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like people do not give people who speak another language enough credit. I feel like there's a lot of like stigma, especially if somebody has like an accent. I know growing up, I grew up like around a lot of Nigerian people, Ghanaian people. And because my church was like really diverse, and I just knew, especially with white people, and I'm not trying to bash white people. I don't have many white people in my life personally. So it's just like, this is kind of from bad experiences personally, but I just noticed like a lot of white people, especially like when you go into the service industry or other things like that, like they'll take you speaking with an accent like you're stupid or something. Like they'll be like, what did you say? Huh? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, girl, they can read you in three different languages. You might want to chill out, you know, speaking like that. So, you know, it really is like, I feel like a lot of people, especially a lot of immigrants, don't give themselves enough credit. Like, you came to a different country, you speak a whole nother language, you raise your kids here, they got taught a whole different language. Like, you did what you need to do, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, and I think that's also really cool, because being able to hear people's stories, being able to, like, learn more, like, my family's just kind of, like, always been in America. We actually came on ships back in the day. It was a pretty crazy journey. So, you know, I don't really have much of a connection to like direct like African roots. So to see people that like actually have a direct like route to their home country, and then to be in another country, and then to be able to tell you about the whole experience, I think is awesome. I think everybody's story needs to be told. And I just, yeah. And then I will say the second thing is, at your brother's wedding, mm-hmm. They'd be playing wedding games, y'all. Like, what the heck? The snake, because like Black weddings too, and I think we talked about this, like, we don't really have many traditions. Like, if you're in a sorority or a fraternity, you'll do your steps and your strolls, mm-hmm. you know, with your line brothers and sisters. And then, you know, other than that, like, I know it's jumping the broom, which is significant. If you don't know what jumping the broom is, back in the day, the slaves weren't allowed to get married. So the only way that they could basically seal the marriage, make it official, is to jump the broom. And historically, brooms have been passed down from family to family, generation to generation, and they'll be decorated with like your wedding colors, with all types of like ribbons, jewels, whatever. I don't know if we have a broom. Like, I don't know if my family has a broom, so we might have to start. We might start that with us. But yeah, like, that's the only wedding tradition like that I could think of really that was like super significant, other than just being like having it be like super spiritual like ceremony. So yeah, to see like all that like happened at your brother's wedding, I was like, that is super cool. Like, I like it. And it was an interesting like time for me too. It was also like, we were super early in our relationship. Yeah. So I didn't know anybody, like all the cousins and everybody that I know now, I knew none of them at the time. So like, I was basically kind of alone, because he was in the wedding party, obviously. And everybody I knew, like his parents, everybody was like kind of doing other things. So I was just kind of like, I'm the plus one. Like, I'm moving here. Because I think we've been dating for like maybe 2 months at the time, like two, three, maybe 3 months. But I hadn't been around like much family at that time. So yeah, but like, they play the snake game?
Yeah, so the snake is Spanish, la víbora. It's so basically like the man and the woman stand on a chair, or the man, the woman, however you want to get married.
True.
That's up to you at that point. Just make sure you get married.
Just make sure you get married. Okay.
So it's like the bride and the groom will stand on two chairs with their closest friends, or if you're a man, it's the strongest of your friends. If you're a woman, please figure out who's the strongest between y'all and choose accordingly. Men, same thing. Choose the strongest between y'all and plan accordingly. Because what happens is, so you're put up on these chairs, and the bride and the groom are holding, so the groom is holding the veil, or the, not the veil, whatever the long ass cape thing is. Yeah.
Wait, that is the veil.
That's the veil. Yeah, so yeah, they'll be holding the veil, and it's like stretched out. So you're on one chair, the other person on the other chair, and you're basically creating like a bridge. And what happens is, there's a group of people, whoever wants to join in. First, it starts with only men, and then they do only women. So, like, all the men or all the women will line up in kind of like a figure eight formation. Mm-hmm. And it's never fully connected. So there's always somebody in the back, and there's always somebody in the front. Mm-hmm. Again, plan accordingly, because if you're going to be in the front, you have to be fast and you have to be strong. If you're going to be in the back, you have to be able to withstand whiplash.
I was like in the middle somewhere, I think, because I didn't know what was going on.
If you're in the middle, the middle is a safe zone.
I was like, your mom and your sister grabbed my hands, and we didn't know what's going on.
The middle is always going to be the safe zone. The front and the back are always going to be danger areas. So what happens is, they line up in the figure eight formation, they play music, and they just start running around you in that figure eight formation. The goal is for the men to knock off the groom, for the women to knock off the bride. And that's why I said you have people holding you up. So it's like, when they're doing that, they're running around, you're trying to knock you off, but they have to keep on consisting that figure eight formation. And that's really all that one is.
I would like to preface, if you're invited to our wedding in the future, if we get married, possibly, I don't know, I wish you would try to knock me off. I wish a motherfucker would.
But and it's funny, because it gets to the point, especially at Tony's wedding, it got to the point where the chair was gone.
Folks was getting distracted.
The chair was gone, and the guys were just holding up my brother
literally
by his ankles and his knees, like holding him up so he wouldn't fall. And like I said, that's the point. You're not supposed to fall, because like, I think the whole like premise of it is like showing that like, no matter what happens, and no matter what obstacles you go through, or how many people try to tear you down, you're gonna stay together, you're gonna stay up.
Oh, that's why they hold the thing.
That's why they hold it.
Okay, like a little symbolism.
Yeah, so, and then there's that. There's also the, and I've seen this done at other cultural weddings before, where it's like, they get the little, what's that thing that women wear around their thigh?
Oh, I do. I was like, I do see that at other weddings too, like weddings in general, mm-hmm. but it's the garter.
I don't know what it's called, but it's that little like ribbon kind of like lace thingy that women wear around their thighs. So basically the man has to like get it off with his mouth or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, it's called a garter belt. Ooh, that's a little risque.
There's that. They didn't do this at my brother's wedding, but they did this at another wedding that I saw. So the man will hold a baby if they don't have a child already, or at least an infant.
A real child?
Yes, a real child. They will hold an infant, somebody's child. Doesn't Ooh. Matter who it is. If somebody okay. people love to volunteer their children for this part of the
I'm scary. This sounds dangerous. No,
it's not dangerous at all. So they'll hold that, and they'll be wearing an apron, and the woman will be holding a belt, and she'll have like a beer or like a drink in her hand. Obviously if you're pregnant, don't drink, but they'll be holding a beer or some form of beverage in their mm-hmm. hand, and they'll just be dancing, and like she'll come around, she'll like hit him with the belt, and he has a and I've seen this done multiple ways. Like the man will hold a child and a broom, or like a child and like a spatula and some shit, just to symbolize basically saying like gender roles are no longer present. It's like if you're in this relationship, you're gonna be doing this as long as I do. Like gender roles aren't gonna matter.
That's yeah.
So it's like that's the whole symbolism of the man wearing the apron, basically. How do I say this? Basically giving them the opposite side of gender roles, and
like he's being like traditionally more feminine, uh-huh. and she's being traditionally exactly. more. Gotcha. Yeah, I like that though, because I feel like that's in a marriage, like y'all both agreed to do. You know, like that's both of y'all's kids. It's not babysitting at that point, or it's not, you know, chores at that point. It's just like these are the things that we need to do because mm-hmm. we're both together. I like that one. I like the symbolism.
Yeah. Again. So those are just a few of them. Another, I think, biggest cultural things, and we talked about like the language barrier. Obviously, there's a language barrier there. But I think for me looking at it, it's more of not like you need to learn Spanish or them need to learn English. It's more of like we're trying to communicate. There's just a communication gap.
Yeah.
And that's really all it is.
I'm learning more. Mm-hmm. Like I'm actively trying to learn Spanish, and I'm really able to I'm still able to like have fun, communicate like with everybody, like whatever. And no matter what, there is always somebody that speaks Spanish or somebody that speaks English. So it's like, it's not like, like if he's not there to translate for me or like whatever, help me out, like one of his cousins is, or like his sister or somebody, like, so I'm not like ever gonna feel like, oh, I can't be around his family or whatever. Cause I think that was also part of like a little bit of my fear. Cause I was like, oh, he could be around like my mom without me. Like, cause they both, first of all, let me tell y'all something that happened today. So the new season, is it out already?
Yes.
So the new season of Cobra Kai is out, and he loves it. And my mom loves it too. She like binge watched it like a year ago or something. She's just like, she fell in love. She loves Cobra Kai. And when they first like met each other, like that was something they bonded over. So he literally called my mom today, and they had a whole separate conversation without me, and talking about, oh yeah, we got to plan a date so we can watch Cobra Kai together. Like, yeah, we'll get some food and we'll sit there and binge watch the whole season. I was like, what? And then they were like, yeah, without Sydney. And then I get on the phone with my mom. She was like, no, I was talking about another Sydney. I was like, what? So it's so funny. So they're literally gonna watch Cobra Kai together. But I thought that was cool. Like, and I guess originally when we got together, I was scared of like not being able to do stuff like that. Like, you know, if I bonded with his mom over something or whatever, like, or you know, his sister, like, you know, and I mean all of his siblings, like they all speak English, like Spanish, whatever. But I don't know. Like, I just felt like, and I think maybe I was holding myself back more than anything. Because yeah, I've been around your mom like without anybody else. I literally, her and I were driving around one time, like I've helped her cook food, like, you know, we've been able to, like, we're fine. So yeah, like I think it's just kind of like in my head type of thing. I think it's a general relationship thing, I guess, like, because, like, you know, I want people to like me. I don't want people to think I'm an outsider. Obviously I'm somebody new, but you know, I want people to like me. At the end of the day, I do care what people think about me, you know. Also at the end of the day, I'm gonna do what I want to do, but I still, you know, like I want to make a good impression because mm-hmm. I like you. And obviously you came from good people, so I want them to like me too. Same thing with your friends, like, you know, like whenever I'm meeting these people. So yeah, and I think that's like something that is really big for me, but it's not like cultural necessarily. I think it's just been like it's really just anxiety, to be mm-hmm. honest.
And I feel like, and with all that being said, I personally feel like I, especially in the beginning of the relationship, like I want you to be one, comfortable around me, two, comfortable with my family and my friends. So it's like with that, I want you to be able to like fully like immerse yourself into like our culture, because there's a lot of things that are, there's a lot of very beautiful things that we do like on a consistent basis. So it's like for example, for me, the biggest thing is like family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always going to be family. Like I love my family, my friends are an extension of my family. At least that's what I consider them being.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you this before, I don't know if it's so much more of like an actual cultural thing or I should say an old school cultural thing versus a new school cultural thing, to where it's like, yeah, like in growing up in Mexico, it's like you have to be kind of tight knit with your family, because mm-hmm. that's literally all you got. Like both of my parents come from like poor families that made their way out the gutter. And so like coming here, the new school aspect of it is like, well, once you get here, like you literally don't have anybody. Like you come to this country for a better life and
mm-hmm.
with little money, whatever little money that you have. And so you're trying to build basically a better life for you and your own.
Yeah.
So it's like, for me, what I've seen, it's like other Hispanic people or the Latino people, when they come over, they tend to stick with mostly other Hispanic or Latino people as well. And I guess for me, looking at it, it's like, is it because we're used to that? At least being in our own countries, we're usually around our own people. Or is it more of like a, I don't know anybody else, so let me gravitate towards the person who's closest to me or like me?
I think the same thing happens like with me though, because I like growing up, my mom's a teacher, so like sometimes we would move to different school districts. So like I've been in a couple different school districts throughout like elementary school, middle school, and high school. And the demographics always look different. Like, you know, one school we went to and they had just done some redistricting, so it was a lot more Black and brown kids in like that school than they had been used to, because it was like a more predominantly like white area. And you know, like that's good, because you know, like you have these like minorities that are moving into like a, maybe like a more affluent neighborhood, which is like, first of all, redlining, that's a big thing, like pushing people, basically like districting and like how they drew out counties and stuff like that. I have a book actually that I've been reading. It's called The Color of the Law. And it talks about basically how they set up neighborhoods and real estate so it's detrimental to Black and brown people, which is super crazy. If you get a chance, it's on Amazon for maybe like $7 or $8, but it's a really good book. It really kind of shows you a little bit more about real estate, because that's very real. But anyways, redistricting and all of that stuff, political wise, but also just like, you know, money wise. So yeah, but in that area, like, you know, it was predominantly white, and then you have all these like kids of other cultures coming in too. When like in elementary school, because that was middle school, and then no, that was elementary school, and then like my other elementary school was already predominantly Black area, in South Atlanta, and then I went to another school which is like pretty culturally diverse. So you know, like I've kind of gotten my share of like, you know, all these different things, different teachers as well, and so it's been crazy. But I think throughout it all, generally most of my friends have always been Black people. Specifically Black women, and not even just Black women. I feel like just minorities in general. Like if you're Japanese, if you're Mexican, if you're like from Panama, like you're my friend, because I feel like, again, it's also easier. And not to say that like I can't be friends with white people. I just feel like it's not as hard. Like I'm not having to like work as hard. Especially I feel like when we were younger, I did have like more white friends. I will say like I did have a few that like we all ran together, because race wasn't like a big thing for us to discuss, or like it wasn't as like important, I guess, because we didn't notice it as much, you know, unless like we were in school and they were talking about something super specific. Like we were in what, fourth grade when Barack Obama got elected to be president. So that was kind of a big thing. Like, oh, okay, so this is a man that looks like us. He's president now. Like that's super crazy after historically it only being white men. So like from 2008 to 2016, that's like race. I think that's when race really kind of became prevalent in my mind. Like, okay, because then you have all these things happen. You have, you know, Trayvon Martin getting shot. You have, you know, body cams being put on police, but you also have more representation in the media, which is also super crazy because I feel like in the 90s, there was a lot of representation, like, you know, and things like that. And then it dipped off and then I felt like it popped back up, you know, and I don't know if it was just me, but like, I feel like that's kind of how I view media. Cause I feel like you had stuff like Kenan and Kel, you had all that, not only say Dan Schneider stuff, but you know, you had stuff, not to do too much on Dan Schneider, get Jeanette McCurdy's new book. Yeah, but not to do too much on him, but you know, you had like stuff like that. You had, I don't know, Gabrielle Union was in a lot of stuff. You had Boys in the Hood. Was in the 90s? I don't know. You had like a lot of, like you had a lot of stuff to kind of relate to in general. And then I feel like it kind of dipped in the 2000s when I feel like people put like Paris Hilton, Britney Spears were kind of more at the forefront of like, you know, popular media and entertainment. And then I feel like when it picked back up, you know, with Beyonce and, you know, Rihanna and these other like people, I don't know. But that's maybe later in the episode or a different episode, but but back to my friends, I feel like, you know, that's when we really started to like notice culture. And so that's when I noticed like 2008 really is when I really started to notice, and I started to really notice racism then too. Like I don't think I had ever experienced it, or at least remember experiencing it before then. And then after then, it's like, I can definitely remember and occur, and I don't really want to go over them, but I definitely can remember like instances where, you know, somebody was being racist towards me or, you know, prejudiced towards me. And I was like, that's super crazy, you know? And so I'm in my mind too, even though I'm Black and I have cultural differences, like I'm just a person. I think that's always been my thing. So I'm just like, why are people being super like aggressive and angry towards me? You know, like, and I don't understand it. So, and it's also crazy. Like, I think in school too is like a big place where this happens, but you'll have like, you know, Black kids, Asian kids, Native kids, Hispanic kids who have already grown up knowing certain things. Like my mom always told me that Sydney, you're gonna have to work twice as hard. And she was never wrong about that. Like she's a woman herself that's had to work twice as hard. So she's always told me that I had to work twice as hard. I never understood that. I always worked hard. I had good grades, you know, I was in extracurriculars. I was just doing what I thought was normal. But then I did like start to realize, especially like in high school, seeing like my white counterparts do the bare minimum and get ahead or be in the same place as me. And I'm like, huh? Like you didn't do the extra credit. You didn't do, you know, like you cheated on the test. Like what, you know? So like all this crazy stuff. And I just never quite, you know, I never quite noticed that. And then it's like almost like a pandering to other, like to white kids. Like, well, we can't talk about slavery because it'll upset Sally. Like what? Sally's family, it's like my family, what are you talking about? Like, you know, well, we can't really, you know, we can't say that or we can't do that because it's really gonna upset, you know, Joey. Like, who cares about Joey? Joey, what? Joey put a colors only sign on the water fountain. Shut up. Like, and I really did notice that, like in elementary school and in middle school, like where I was, the area I was, like teachers would like kind of do that. And I'd be like, huh? Like, and I vividly remember, like, and especially like during Black History Month, like that was my first instance where people were like, what about White History Month? Huh? What do you mean? That's months, you know, January through June. Like, what are you talking about? You know, like, so it was super crazy. So, you know, in conclusion, I know that I always keep like Black and brown people in my back pocket, like as friends, because it's a more comfortable friendship. It's a little bit easier. I think something like when it's not like, when you don't have to work at something, it's just much more fun. Now at work, of course, like I have colleagues, you know, and then even, you know, because I am in the queer community, like I can be friends with queer white people, you know, because I feel like there's like a level, I also feel like there has to be like a level of struggle, or there has to be a level of like oppression or something, like something that's like society's telling us no, but we're saying, yeah, like we, there's something in there that like kind of groups us all together. So in conclusion, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. But what I do have a question for you. Mm-hmm. What is something that I've introduced you to that you didn't know about or like you really like?
You already know the answer to this.
Well, the people don't know.
But I'm gonna say it.
Okay.
Because Mr. Telephone Man, there's something wrong with my line. When I dial my baby's number, get a click every time. Fucking New Edition. Oh my God. First of all, I wasn't, and to this day, I'm not a huge like R&B fan. Like if I hear R&B and I genuinely like it, I'm gonna listen to it. Mm-hmm. But I usually never go out of my way to listen to R&B, probably because I just never gravitated towards it. It's just one of those things where it's like, I'll hear it. And I'm like, it's okay. But it's just not for me. At least a lot of it is. But with all of this like older R&B and like a little bit of the new R&B that I'm getting into, like I think the only like real R&B I listened to like before meeting you, like I listened to Bryson Tiller, you know, we all heard Beyonce's little R&B stuff and
not little R&B stuff, don't do that.
But you know what I mean. And it's just like, okay, this is cool. But like the old R&B, so it's like when you showed me the New Edition story and like all the shit that they went through, oh, damn, it's just crazy. But also the music's really fucking good. And I was like, I really like that. I think for me, especially because like I'm big on music, like I'm an audiophile. Like I love listening to music.
You're an audio who?
Audiophile.
That's what that means?
I think so. I hope so.
Oh, cool.
But
okay.
But it's like I love music. I love sounds. Mm-hmm. I like to hear people talk. Like I'm very big on my ears, and this is like the new edition. I fucking love. Like now, I love New Edition. If you would have asked me a year ago, hey, are you in New Edition? I'm like, who the fuck are they? Like,
right.
I would have never listened to them out of my own cognizance. But now, it's like music is my love language. Like I love listening to music. I can listen to music all day, every day. That's not an issue, and it's like. I knew who Bobby Brown was because of the controversy,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't know who, like, New Edition, I didn't know any of their stories, so I was, like, listening to that and watching the
you
series.
You didn't know Riz?
I didn't know Riz. Belle Biv DeVoe. I've heard Poison, I mean, but who hasn't heard Poison?
Who hasn't heard Poison?
That's the thing, like, I've heard Poison, but it's like, Can You Stand the Rain, Mr. Telephone Man, Cool It Now.
Okay.
What's the other one I liked? If It Isn't Love.
Oh,
and I was like, yeah, if it isn't love, it's like all these good songs. It's like, wow, like I really love like older R&B, and it's like, and you also introduced me to Powerline, aka,
you forgot his name, ladies and gentlemen. We have a fake fan, Tevin Campbell.
Tevin Campbell.
Can we talk?
But I've heard, but for me, it's like. All this music is great, but then again, the way I grew up, like I just grew up basically listening to whatever my brother listened to. So it's like my brother had a period where he listened to like classical, like older rock music, and then he listened like to like screamo and like it's like emo punk music, and yeah, he listened to like a little bit of older hip hop and rap. So it's like
not Run DMC. I'm just kidding. Did he? No offense to Run DMC. Yeah.
I don't think I ever got into Run DMC.
No, I didn't.
But like from that, I kind of branched off on my own. And like during lockdown, I started getting into the Wu-Tang show that was on Hulu. And I was like, wow.
Is that when you got into the Wu-Tang?
That's when I got.
I thought deep. Like you've been knowing
no,
the Wu-Tang.
No. Oh. Like, I didn't get. I mean, obviously I heard Cream, but who hasn't? And it's just like. Once I got into listening more to Wu-Tang, it's like, wow, like the RZA, the GZA, Method Man, Inspector Deck. It's like all of these like great artists that came out of the boroughs of New York. And it's like, wow, this is fucking amazing. And it's like,
what movie was Method Man in? Soul Plane. I've been thinking about that all the time.
He's also in Luke Cage on Marvel.
There was another movie, though, that him and Ice Cube and there's so many, Regina King. I'm gonna have to look it up. Method Man, because there it was a movie that came out in like the 90s and it was about school. Hold on, my bad. I mean to hold you up, player. I was just trying to look it up.
No, you're good. And it's like, I mean, speaking of famous movie like Juice, you know, Tupac and Poetic Justice. And it's like, for me, like, culturally, if we're talking about music, like, I love older music. So it's like, when I listen to, like, for example, when I listen to, like, Mexican music, I listen to a lot of older stuff. Yeah, I like some of the new stuff. I can't get into reggaeton as much as I want to. Like, yeah, there are songs that are hit or miss for me. But I love, like, the older, like the 80s and 90s, like, pop style of Mexican music. And I love, like, the traditional, what's called norteño music, which is the narco soundtrack that you hear me and my brother listen to all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it's like, I love that. And
Higher learning. That's what it's called. Yeah. People from all different walks of life encounter, like, speaking of, oh, it's on Tubi. I might watch that again because it was really good. People from all different walks of life encounter racial tension, rape, responsibility, and the meaning of education on a university campus. And it's got all different people. Omar Epps is in it. Michael Ravenport is in it. He plays a skinhead in it. Like, he plays this, like, because they're all younger in this. So they're, like, all early 20s or whatever, like, at the time of this, like, filming. Or some of them might have been in their 30s, but they're playing, you know, college students. So Michael Ravenport, his, like, character, because, you know, Michael Ravenport, if y'all don't know, like, he's this white guy, but he's, like, he's for black people. Like, he's, you know, he's for the culture. But in this film, it was cool because he was playing just this regular white kid that was going to college. He didn't really have many friends. He was kind of a loner. Like, and I feel like we all know that student, right? And so he just kind of gets roped in with, like, a group of guys. He thinks they're his friends. And they turn out to be, like, neo-Nazi skinhead guys. And so he kind of goes down this path where his roommates are black. I think his roommate in the movie is Ice Cube, who's his character's name is Fudge. But I think his roommate in the movie is Ice Cube. And so you see him, like, interact with Ice Cube. And they have, like, a couple fallings out. He interacts with, like, Method Man. They have a couple fallings out. And so because he's interacting with all these black people, he's having all these, like, negative experiences with black people. And so that just pushes him further in with, like, the skinhead neo-Nazis. And I don't want to ruin the movie for anybody, but it's really good. Tyra Banks is in it too. She plays Omar Epps' girlfriend. Lawrence Fishburne, Busta Rhymes. So there's oh wait, maybe Method Man isn't in this. Maybe that was Busta. I could have sworn Method Man was here though, but I don't see him on the credit list. But yeah, I mean, there's some other people from, you know, like, I'm sure you recognize other actors in there, but very good movie, Higher Learning. And that's kind of on brand for talking about culture, you know?
No, yeah, for sure. Because it's like shifting away from music and going into, like, movies. Like, I introduced you to a couple of different films. We watched Spare Parts.
Yes, that was so good.
We watched McFarlane USA.
Yes, shout out to a white savior. Shout out to.
So we watched Spare Parts. We watched McFarlane USA. There's still a couple other ones that I want to show you.
Michael.
The Blind Side. But we already knew about The Blind Side. And there's also another movie that I wanted to show you, and I can't remember the name of it. But it's got Lou Diamond Phillips in it. Where the same thing, they're in a school. It's got the guy from American Me. I can't remember his goddamn name.
How do you spell Lou?
Lou, L-O-U. Yeah, Lou Diamond Phillips is in it. They're basically, again, they're in a school.
Courage Under La Bamba?
No, but he was in La Bamba.
Stand and Deliver?
He Stand and Deliver, that's what it was.
Why was it already on my watch list? 1988. Oh, this is the guy that played Selena's mom in Selena, right?
Selena's dad?
Yep, you're right. Equality. And that's what we're talking about. Yeah, he's still alive. Okay, he's looking good.
What's his name? It's like something. Yeah, Edward James Olmos. Yeah, Edward James Olmos.
Machete's not in this? I don't want to watch it.
Huh?
Machete's not in it. I don't want to watch it.
Danny Trejo? But speaking of Danny Trejo, he was in the Rob Zombie Halloween remake.
He was.
Spoiler alert, he gets murked.
Well, dang.
That's on him. He was a good guy though in that one. But speaking of Machete, I think everybody's first, like, instance of seeing Machete is Spy Kids.
Yeah.
But mine was I can't remember what movie he was in. I want to say it was like he was playing Machete. And it's like, oh, like Danny Trejo, Machete is fucking, one, he's a great actor. Two, he has a really good story. Like, he actually has been to jail, and he actually, like, did get caught in doing.
From Dusk Till Dawn?
Yeah, from Dusk
Till Dawn. I was about to say that, because that was before Machete.
And I think Salma Hayek's in that one, too.
Yeah.
And it's like all these great, like, Hispanic or Latino actors, like Sofia Vergara.
Oh, Cheech.
Yeah.
AKA Felix. Yeah, I'm not your uncle.
Cheech, Sofia Vergara, even though her voice is annoying. Salma Hayek.
Don't do Sofia Vergara.
Michael Pena.
So this is a good question. So my question to you is, actually, I'm going to ask myself first because I want to answer first. So Sydney, what is your favorite, representation or like film in Black culture? Well, thank you, Sydney, for asking. And I'll ask you the same question for Mexican culture or Hispanic culture in general, because I feel like there is representation that's not like directly Mexican, but you know, it's good representation too. I know people be having beefs with other countries, but you know, like Encanto was good, but anyways, but like it was like Colombian, like mm-hmm. you know, in its culture.
Encanto was really good.
Yeah, but it's hella good. But for me, oh dang, do I even have an answer to this? I do. I will say, I think one of my favorite like films with Black representation in it is actually gonna be Friday, because it's a regular day in the hood. it just is. You have two really good actors. I mean, some people might not think Ice Cube is a good actor. I mean, I think he plays every single role that he is in the way it's supposed to be played, and I feel like acting, that's how it is. Most of his is typecasted. He's gonna be the guy from the hood, or he's gonna be, you know, the loud rapper,
Black man,
the loud Black cop, nothing but a fucking stereotype.
And see, he's basically broke the fourth wall now, because it's like he's very self-aware,
yeah,
of who he is as an actor. But it's like,
shout, that's 21 Jump Street,
but it's like, that's who you are as an actor.
Yeah.
And it's so, like you play that role because that is who you are, not only as an actor, but as a person. So
exactly.
you're gonna play that role very, very well. So again, with that, and it's like, and he's also super fucking funny. I think my first instances of seeing Ice Cube is in Are We There Yet?
Yeah.
And like,
that was mine too. I think, especially like, I think in Friday too, you just see him, he's like super regular. And, you know, I love a good rapper turned actor, like Queen Latifah, Ice Cube, Ludacris. Y'all can't tell me they didn't do their thing. But I don't know, but Tupac, he was already like trained. Like he went to a fine art school and everything. He was both. He had his hand in many pots. But yeah, Friday, I would say. And then hold on, I gotta.
Kid Cudi now.
Huh?
Kid Cudi now.
He is acting a lot. I think he's got something new that's coming out too.
Yeah, I think he's an X, the new one, X.
Yes.
Where they're filming the porno.
Yeah, and they get like murked.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one is good too. I will also say another film that I like, which is, we both saw this film, was Life, mm-hmm. with Eddie Murphy, mm-hmm. and
Martin Lawrence.
Yes. That movie was so good because
you're gonna eat your cornbread.
You gonna eat your cornbread.
I'm tired of these motherfucking farmers.
Eddie Murphy. Meanie, Miney, Melvin. That was such a good one.
Why y'all call him that? He just can't get right.
Can't get right. I forgot I can't get right. Oh.
But
that'd be my, I'd be the paw boss whenever we had the baby. Bernie Mac and, you know, so many great people.
Isn't that Cedric the Entertainer in that one too?
Is he?
I can't remember.
I don't think Cedric the Entertainer is.
No, I don't think he
is.
I don't think he is.
No, but they have a lot of good actors, and it's just, it's a really good film, and it's cool because, and I think I watched an analysis about the movie, because I feel like I was kind of upset that I really never heard much about the film. Mm-hmm. Like I've never heard, like over the years, like you'll hear people talk about Boys in the Hood, people mm-hmm. talk about Friday, all these other films, and I'm like, why aren't y'all talking about 12 Years a Slave? They'll be talking about. One thing I don't like is a slave, and I'm not because of the history, but I feel like every now and again there'll be a slave movie, and that movie will be the only one that gets Oscars. And I feel like it's white Hollywood perpetuating a thing about people. Like the year, I'm gonna go off on just a little rant here. The year that what's his name? Black filmmaker. He made Krooklyn.
He made what? Spike Lee?
Yes, there we go. Jeez, I was having a little brain fart. But anyways, that was the same year that Spike Lee made Black Klansman,
mm-hmm.
with Adam Driver and John David Washington.
By the way, I'm gonna stop you.
real quick. Adam Driver played that role too
a little too good.
Well.
A little too good. I'm looking at him side on. I don't know about that
role. A little bit too good.
He said, Adam.
But that's me. But that's just me.
Hey man, that's us. That's look. That's just us. Off the record, that was terrible. On the record, you did a good job. And so yeah, so the year that Black Klansman was also nominated for an Oscar, the Green Book was nominated for an Oscar, and that had Mahershala Ali. I don't think he won the Oscar for Best Actor, but they did win Best Film that year, and that was a film. It was white savior-esque, but it wasn't a film necessarily about uplifting the Black people. It was a film that was, like, it was during segregation. And basically the film's message, like, if we were going to go for a Black film that year, the film, like, the message of Black Klansman was way better. And I feel like that's what a lot of people had to say. Spike Lee was upset about it, obviously. But, you know, there's a lot of people that were upset about it because, like, that shouldn't have been the film that should have been rewarded. Because it's like, y'all are seemingly rewarding Black people, but what you're doing is putting up on a pedestal that we're still like a lower tier, basically. So I don't like that. So me personally, like, I don't like segregation films, slave films, or whatever, especially if they're not made by Black creators, like, you know, like Spike Lee or something like that, because it's just like, I feel like it's really just putting people down. And a lot of the people that go to see those films are not Black people. It's a lot of white people in the audience. And it's kind of like, why are y'all going to look at Black people get beat? You know what I'm saying? I don't like that. I don't like that at all. But that's just me. That's just me, you know. But I mean, it's not even just me. Like, it's a lot of people that, you know, feel that way. They're like, we don't have to have a slave movie come out every single year. And I feel that, like, I want to tell stories, but we could do it in more of a documentary film way. We don't have to have Lupita Nyong'o get on her knees. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, it's a little too much, especially the imagery. Like, I feel like we're pushing too much negative imagery and trauma dumping. And that's something about the movie Life that I really liked, is they give you a little bit of trauma, because the whole premise is that Martin Lawrence and Eddie Murphy, they get into some shenanigans. They don't know each other, but they accidentally end up in front of a dead body. They didn't kill this man, whatever, but there's some white police, and it was back in what, the 30s or something, mm-hmm. you know? So they killed, the police ended up, you know, seeing them the 30s or 40s or something like that. And so the police end up, you know, finding them. Of course, it's all white police. The police were the ones that killed that man, but they blame it on Martin Lawrence and Eddie Murphy. So they get sentenced to life in prison. That's the whole premise. So they get sent, this is the gun line. So they get sent to this prison, and it's only Black men in the prison too, which it's another kind of a nod to society. Like, pretty much most prisons are made up of minority groups. Prison is almost like a second slavery kind of thing, you know? So it kind of plays on that. I don't know if it's Alabama, or they're in a southern state for Alabama. Sure. I think so. And so they're in a southern state. So it's like, it's a very hardcore prison. They don't have any, he said like something, the warden was like, we don't have any blah, blah, blah. We just have the gun line. And so if you step one toe out of prison, you're dead. Blah, 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 you're dead. You do something, you're dead. So, and they're just basically working like almost like a chain gang kind of thing. Basically, they're in the striped uniforms. They're you know, doing all that stuff. But it's Martin Lawrence and it's Eddie Murphy. So I really like, I don't think anybody else could have played those roles. Like, they made it so provocative. They made it so interesting to watch that it wasn't sad. Like, there were parts that would make you sad. Like, towards the end, they actually see the policeman that, like, you know, and they're old men at this point. Like, they see the policeman that it was the original person to blame them and all that. So they do face their demons throughout the story, but it's beautiful. It's beautiful because it just shows you kind of, it shows you life. It shows you life and it shows you how to, like, appreciate, you know, everything that you've going on. But especially for me, like, appreciate other Black people. Like, you, sometimes you just never know how long you have with people, especially the way the world seems to go now. And so that's just like, it's a beautiful telling. And I feel like that film, I feel like, for me, Candyman too, the old one and the new one, I feel like they're both ways of, like, showing Black culture and a little bit of Black trauma, yes, without, I don't know, like, without traumatizing you. Like, without, like, but, like, I can't watch 12 Years a Slave and not be traumatized. I can't watch Antebellum with, first of all, my family watched Antebellum, like, one, like, Thanksgiving, because we just were like,
is that with Keke Palmer?
No, it's with Janelle Monáe. Another musician that is acting a lot. She does really well. But yeah, so we watched Antebellum. We didn't really know what it was about, but yeah, and then we watched Antebellum and we were like, okay, happy holidays. Like, it was really, so, you know, like, you have films like that, but then you also have films like Black Klansman or whatever that are more uplifting. So that's kind of my side of things. Like, I do like seeing Black representation, but I only like seeing the uplifting stuff. I, you know, Roots, there are, you know, there's definitely, what's the one we watched, The Butler? Mm-hmm. There's definitely, like, stories that are, like, powerful. They kind of hit deep and everything, but I just feel like every year, every other year, we don't necessarily have to be putting out like a feature film, a theatrical film about slavery or about segregation. I feel like we can do it and tell it in a documentary way or whatever, just in a way that's not like traumatizing for people. But you know, that's just me though, you know, I don't know. That's just me though, you know? So even though I took over the question, the same question still applies to you. What is a, like, film or a couple of films or whatever that you really love that, like, are an expression of your culture, basically?
So for me, there's not a lot, at least not a lot that Americans see, as far as representation goes. The biggest ones that I really love are, one, it's Instructions Not Included, or not Instructions Not Included, Under the Same Moon, Bajo la Misma Luna. It has Eugenio Derbez in it, and so basically it's about this little kid who his mom is living in the United States. Mm-hmm. And he takes it upon himself to cross the border and be with his mom. And along the way, he runs into like these different little obstacles that it makes it seem like what people actually go through. And for the most part, it is accurate, but it's not as accurate as it can be because obviously child.
It's a, yeah.
And
yeah.
And he runs into this guy who is working at this like tomato picking place, and like he gets raided by ICE, and they ended up escaping, and they go on their own. And I'm not gonna spoil it for anybody who really wants to watch it, because I highly recommend watching. It's a really, really good movie, and it really does show at least a glimpse of what people go through in order to be here. What people actually sacrifice. So, like, with my parents, my father had to sacrifice that. He came here first, and then my mom came. She brought me and my brother over, and it's, like I said, it's accurate to a point. One thing about me is, like, because I am Mexican, I have a different sense of opinion, or should I say, a different point of view from what other Hispanic or Latino people may face. Like, I'm not like second or third generation. I am basically first generation Mexican. I'm not American at all. My sister's technically second generation because she was born here. But for me, representation doesn't really come as often. Another movie I love is Spare Parts. Spare Parts deals a lot with the issue of legality. So in the movie, Carlos Pena. Carlos Pena is wanting to be.
Like remembering the plot.
So Carlos Pena's character wants to be in the U.S. military, but he can't because he's illegal. The other characters, so like one of them is super smart, but he can't get into college because he's illegal and his family's poor. Even though he has the grades for it, he's illegal. His family's poor. The other one. And I can't remember these actors' names. I'm just going to refer to them as a character. But the other one, he's like really good with his hands. So he's like a mechanic, basically, and he helps them. So the whole point of Spare Parts is it's this is a school, Carl Hayden Community High School, that they enter this underwater robotics competition, and they end up facing the top colleges in the country. So like MIT, Virginia Tech, like all of these highly acclaimed schools that are known for their technology. So they face them, and it's a true story. It is based on a true story, and like all these guys that ended up getting pretty good jobs. I think one of them did work for NASA. And McFarland USA, which is another true story about this school in McFarland, Texas. So the school in McFarland, Texas, that ended up winning their cross-country meets across the United States. But it only shows the ones that they won in Texas. They won their state championship. They went to the nationals. And for me, it's like Hispanic representation, if it's not that, it's like the only other thing we have is like the one guy who literally plays the same character in every movie. And I think his name is like Hector in every fucking movie.
I think
he was Hector in Fast and the Furious 2.
He was Hector in The Purge Anarchy. Yeah, because and he had really bad teeth in that one too. But yeah, he was Hector in that one.
And it's like that. So for me, it's very different because, I mean, obviously you have these film companies like Pantaleon is a Hispanic Latino film company, and they make a lot of these different movies. So in Mexico, you see the difference between like here and there, because here I can watch these movies and they're not as accurate as I feel like they can be,
mm-hmm.
especially like I said, with like either crossing the border or like the legality of living in the United States and stuff like that. And I told you this multiple times, like even though technically I am considered a permanent resident, it still feels like I'm under house arrest,
mm-hmm.
Because I can't leave the country. I can't really do much. I can't, even if I want to go to school, I would have to pay out of state tuition.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks. I mean, but you know, it's like, what does a dollar really cost? Like, what is the price of freedom at that point?
Right.
And another movie I like is again with Michael Peña, where he plays what's the guy's name? Shit, I can't remember.
Carlos or
no? He
Michael Peña. Wait,
the labor union.
Jesus Christ. Cesar Chavez.
Yeah, Cesar Chavez.
Yeah, is that it?
It is Cesar Chavez. Yeah. Yeah, it should be. But yeah, Michael Peña plays. Oh, he's also fucking Narcos, by the way. Really fucking good. My bad. I love Michael Peña. He's really funny.
Oh, he is not who I thought he was. When you said Michael Peña, I was thinking about the guy. I'm not racist, I swear. I was thinking about, he did play Cesar Chavez. Yeah. I was thinking about the guy that was playing in Ant-Man.
He's the guy that plays in Ant-Man.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That don't look like him.
That's him. When he's like, I lost my dog, that my girlfriend left me. He's like, I lost my dog, my girlfriend
he
left me.
He looks so but I got different. The band, though. I never see him as like a serious actor.
No, yeah, watch Narcos. Watch Narcos with him. He's really, really good.
Wow. And
again, Hispanic film so representation, Narcos. actually, Narcos Mexico. So I will say this about Narcos Mexico. So my parents grew up in that era and that time to where the narcotics smuggling was big and like being really popular, and we watched Narcos Mexico together, and me and my family, we watched it and then we talked about it afterwards, and I would ask them like how accurate is this. She's like, no, like all of this shit is real, like everything that they portrayed. Like I think for me the best Hispanic Latino representation for me being Mexican was in Narcos Mexico, because everything was accurate to what actually happened. Obviously there were some things here and there that had to be scripted for film purposes, but Narcos Mexico was probably one of the most accurate things that happened, because you know it's real life shit that Mexican people are still dealing with to this day. Like the war on drugs is super huge, and it basically shows like the popping off point. Like you see El Chapo in his youth as basically just a gunman for the cartels, and then he starts taking over his own business, and obviously we all know him because he creates a fucking empire.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it's just very accurate to what actually happened in Mexico at the time. And talking to my parents about it, I was like, wow, like this shit's fucking crazy. Like I couldn't even imagine living in a world like that. And I'd be mad as shit if fucking Bad Bunny was shooting at me from the back of a fucking...
First of all, don't do too much on Bad Bunny.
I'd be mad as fuck, because I'm like, ain't no fucking way this motherfucker Bad Bunny's gonna fucking shoot me from the back of this fucking van. I'm dying. I'm gonna off myself off of
that. The album was great. The album was fantastic. Don't do that, buddy.
Un Verano Sin Ti.
Chill out.
Un Verano Sin Ti. No, but yeah, so there's not really a lot. But the little bit that I have seen, I do genuinely like. I don't think there's not much that I don't like. I think the things that I don't like about Hispanic and foreign representation is that it only shows two sides. Like, either you're, like, this super hardworking, like, Mexican family or teenager or person like that makes it out the gutter, or you're fucking running drugs or doing illegal shit.
To be honest, and
I think that like because that does kind of bother me because like I don't associate myself with either one of those groups, mm-hmm. at least like not in the traditional stereotypical aspects. Like, yeah, I mean, yeah, I work hard and I've had my share of my wrongdoings, but I wouldn't really consider myself like I want to see somebody make a movie about like somebody like me living in the United States, like going through what I'm going through now and like knowing the things I can and can't do, knowing that the stuff I can and can't say. And it's just like, if that were more accurate to the point of like now, like, cause all of this shit is just, to me, is like older. Like I said, either we're doing these movies about like these older people who already made it out, mm-hmm. or we're doing movies about these older people who did all these wrongdoings and basically remapped and reshaped the Mexican culture as it is now. And it's like, all that is great, but I don't think there's anything going off now that really, like, you know, like gets me going. It's like, oh yes, Hispanic representation. Like, besides America Chavez and Xochitl Gomez,
mm-hmm.
and Multiverse of Madness, and it's like, yeah, but in all fairness, and this is just my opinion, it was just fan service. Like her role in that movie is all just fan service to fill the plot of Multiverse of Madness. But that, again, it's not here nor there. Michael Peña, I love him, and I love him in Ant-Man, but again, I just feel like he's playing that stereotypical trope of like the Mexican guy that does all this illegal shit.
Yeah. T.I. too. T.I. was just kind of in there, and he was like just kind of a thug, you know. They were all his thug friends. I think one guy was Russian, the other guy was Michael Peña, who was Mexican, and then the guy was T.I. So, you know, they were all pretty much just stupid. And then you kind of had Paul Rudd, who's like this like greasy kind of white guy who's kind of, you know, like underground, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think too, I like, you know, and also guys, we're gonna cut it like soon here. This will be our last like kind of closing thoughts. But I think same here. Like we do have like things. I did like things like Sister and like, I will say, I feel bad about complaining about representation because compared to what you've seen, like representing you in the media, I have more as far as like kind of what you're saying, just kind of like a regular representation or different representations of different Mexican people. Cause like, I also have other Mexican friends who are just like these teenage girls who love like, you know, BTS and stuff like that. You know, like you just have people that are like that. Like we have Sister, we have Family Matters, we have Fresh Prince, even Insecure or something like where it's just like, it's just black people existing, mm-hmm. but they're existing on your screen. It's not like, you know, like you have friends, but you also have like living single, mm-hmm. you know? So, well, living single came first, but you know, you just have these people and they're just trying to make it or they're just trying to whatever. And they will experience these cultural differences. Like that will be prevalent. Like that's a Rapins episode where they, you know, like she experienced racism like at the freaking store.
Oh, when the lady's like, I don't hire black people.
I was like, they really put that on Disney. But you know, like you'll have that. But yeah. Like I'm really realizing either like Hispanic characters will be a side character to, you know, and same thing with black people, but I think more so with Hispanic and Asian characters, they'll be a side character to the main white character or the main black character, or it's like whatever. Like I feel like the cultural movement in media is definitely different for us. Like it's moved a little bit quicker.
And so sorry for interrupting, but
no,
I think
you're fine.
So here's why I think my reason why is because we are the minority of the minority. Mm. You know, you being black, you can obviously see more because you have a higher, you are the majority of my minority. So you're going to see more representation in media and, you know, people talk about it every day. It's like the struggle of being a black person in today's America.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like me personally, it's not talked about enough of the struggle of being Hispanic, Latino, Asian, Pacific Islander, African, mm-hmm. Haitian, Caribbean, anything like that. I just feel like that's not as present, mm-hmm. as it should be. Like, yeah, we have Miles Morales, who is, I think he's half Dominican. And then we, like I said, Xochitl Gomez or America Chavez, we have her. Salma Hayek was in Eternals, which fucking flopped. And it's like,
Ben had America Ferrera. Okay, my bad.
What I'm saying is, like, because when you think about, like, everybody making their big break now,
yeah,
it's gonna be Marvel.
Yeah,
and I could be wrong, but that's how I'm seeing it. So I was like, I want to see more Marvel characters, or at least more Hispanic Latino actors being Marvel characters. Like, give them a little bit of oomph. And like we've seen in, I think it was Far From Home, where you have Donald Glover's character, who is supposed to be the Prowler, because he says his nephew lives in the city, he wants it to be safe, blah, blah, blah. But he's supposed to be the Prowler, and his nephew obviously is supposed to be Miles Morales. Again, we had Into the Spider-Verse with Miles Morales being the main character. Xochitl Gomez, her character America Chavez, is basically, besides Doctor Strange and Scarlet Witch, is basically the main character. And it's like, this is great, and I'm all here for it. But I just want to see a little bit more of normalism in being a Hispanic or Latino person in the United States.
Not
for you. And like I said, I mean, you shouldn't feel bad for complaining about representation, because that's how you see it.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's how you see it. Yeah. And if you see it that way, then, you know, fight for it. Keep on looking for accurate representation, because that's what I'm going to keep on doing.
John Leguizamo said something about that too. Because, you know, he's like the guy that'll always play like somebody vaguely Italian or whatever, because he can't always get a role of, you know, just like a Hispanic person. And I think, like, I mean, he'd be putting videos on his like Instagram, but he like said, he was like, well, one, you know, Kiki Palmer said this too. Like, a lot of actors, especially actors of colors, have said this, because like their film, like their credit list might not be as like, you know, nice as like Florence Pugh's. Like, it might not be, they're not all going to be Oscar winning movies, and you can't determine that anyways, but they're not always going to get the cream of the crop as far as roles go. And so Kiki Palmer, John Leguizamo, and a lot of other actors say this, but they're like, acting is a job. Like, it is about booking a role and getting a job, getting paid. And so sometimes that is when you're playing, like, unfortunately, like a stereotype, or you're playing something that's like kind of out of your depth as far as like representation wise but he's like, why don't people just write for Hispanic characters? He's like, why don't you make this character Hispanic? He's like, it's not going to be any different. He was like, I don't have to speak a whole bunch of Spanish. He's like, I don't have to do all this stuff. Like, he's like, I can still be myself and be this character. Like, he was like, unless it's super pivotal to the plot, like, I can just be myself. I can be a, you know, just myself, like a regular human being. And so, you know, in conclusion, I definitely feel like representation is moving forward, like, in leaps and bounds. But I feel like, you know, whether it's with, like, people like Sasheen Littlefeather, whether it's with people like John Leguizamo, Kiki Palmer, like, you should be pushing people forward. Like, that's what I love about Jordan Peele. Like, Get Out was, like, really racial and pivotal. Us. Us was just, like, you could take the Black family out of there, you could replace it with an Asian family, you could replace it with a Hispanic family, and it would be, you know, not the same film, but it would be, like, the race of the characters didn't really make too much of a difference. Because, it was a horror film, but he happened to make it star Black people because he wanted to see Black people at the star, you know, of a horror film. So it was kind of interesting, you know, and so I feel like that we just need to have more of that, and we need to have more people that are doing that, you know, more actors and writers, especially writers and producers of color, just like in the writer's room, you know. So in conclusion, yeah.
Yeah, so I like I said, I 100% agree with you on all of that. I mean, culturalism is going to be prevalent no matter who you are, no matter what it is that you believe in, no matter where you come from. I do genuinely love seeing the diversity between us, especially because it's real. It's real life shit that we go through. And although you're Black and I'm Mexican, like, that's never really stopped us from doing anything that we want to do.
Yeah.
And in the long run, and, you know, that's the beauty of it. We're in the struggle, but we're in the struggle together. And at the end of the day, like, you being Black and me being Mexican doesn't really stop anything. At the end of the day, we're both humans, and we're gonna fight to keep on surviving. And we're gonna fight for our cultural representation, and we're gonna also fight for each other, because that's how it should be. But I mean, that's really it. I wanted to thank everybody for enjoying us basically just talk about our life and the experience that we go through. Yeah, and, man, you know, just hit us up. Let us know your story. Let us know what y'all go through, whether you're a person of color or not. Like, I just want to know what cultural differences do you notice on your day-to-day basis or on your day-to-day life? Or and if there isn't any, then maybe you should talk to other people. Talk to people who aren't your same skin color or don't come from the same neighborhood that you come from. Just see different sides of the coin, because at the end of the day, you know, we're all humans. I would like to say we're all technically considered Americans, but at the end of the day, there's still that bias of like, I don't want to be considered that, which is perfectly fine. Tell us how you genuinely feel about either A, being a multicultural person, or B, seeing what multicultural people go through.
Exactly, guys. We are going to, first of all, it's the same intro, Instagram. It's at Society Still Says. Kind of revamping it, so let me know what you think, how you like it. We're trying out a thing with like graphic design, just to incorporate like both of us in there. So we might be changing the logo, we might be changing some different looks. So, you know, feedback is always appreciated. We are also going to start, we're going to put stuff like videos and stuff on TikTok. We're going to start recording videos and also putting stuff. Not a burp, my bad. We're going to start putting stuff on YouTube as well. This is that I like podcasts that like also show you video. So we're going to get we try to do it for this episode. It did not work out the way we wanted to. So it's just audio, but we're going to try to get video and audio all together. But I super appreciate you guys. This is Lalo's first, you know, like this is our first time doing the podcast together. I think we were both a little nervous because we were like, oh, how are we gonna do it? Like, I think I was more nervous than anything, because usually, like, I do the podcast alone, as you guys know. And so to be able to, like, have it and then have somebody, like, I can record with all the time is super great. So, yeah, guys, that's gonna be it. But definitely check us out on the socials. Let us know your cultural experiences yourself. Shout out to all the Black and Mexican people. Not to be biased, but you know what I'm saying? Shout out to us.
Facts. No,
big facts, though. If you're not, log on. I'm just kidding. Share the podcast. Thank you. No, not biased at all. I'm just playing. Unless you're white. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. But definitely share and let us know about your experiences. As always, guys, don't listen to what society tells you, because it's mostly bullshit anyways. We will see you guys in the next episode. Bye.
Love. Peace.